The stars are right, and that means it's time for another episode of The Whisper in Darkness. I'm your host, The Man from Lang. Thank you very much for joining me today. On this episode, we are continuing with our review of the player cards in the Edge of the Earth Investigator expansion. This time, we're taking a look at the rogue cards. This is part one of a three-part series. The multi-class rogue cards will be reviewed in videos of their own. There are spoilers throughout if you care about that sort of thing. If you enjoy what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Just a quick reminder of how we rate cards here on The Whisperer in Darkness. The best of the best get an Elder Sign, while the worst of the worst get an Auto Fail, and the cards in between get a plus one, zero, or Elder Thing, respectively. Cards that you build around or are good in one particular investigator get a Blessed Token, while cards that we believe are destined to end up on the optional list of taboos or that are just bad for the game get a Curse Token. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the patrons of this channel for their tremendous support. The Arkham Horror LCG community is amazing, and these people have gone above and beyond to bring you content like these reviews. Speaking of amazing members of the community, special thanks to Joshua Westland, the latest patron to embrace the darkness. Thank you very much, Joshua, for your support. It is greatly appreciated. If you'd like to support the channel's goals and see your name on this list, head over to patreon.com, sign up for a tier of your choice, and claim your rewards. That would be awesome. I'd also like to thank Cole Monroe Chitty for the fantastic art that graces the channel, Nicole Fiscus for the new Whisper in Darkness logo, and Nate Lost in Time and Space for the intro as well as the overlays. Thank you very much. I couldn't do it without you. We are back with our reviews of the player cards in the Edge of the Earth Investigator expansion. This time around, we are tackling the rogue cards. We are going to kick things off with Underworld Support. It is a asset that doesn't cost anything because it's permanent. Limit one per deck. Purchase at deck creation. Your deck cannot include more than one copy of each non-weakness, non-signature card by title. Reduce your deck size by five. What do you guys think about this one? Another puzzle to solve for players.
Yeah. You had made a really good point before we were recording, was that this card sort of acts like forced learning in its own kind of weird way, in that it forces you to think about cards you wouldn't otherwise necessarily think about. Because while it's not increasing your deck size, it's increasing the amount of different cards in your deck.
Right, you have to have 25 different cards. True, that's not something that you normally have to deal with.
Yeah, I tested this in a Winifred Habimok deck, and I basically just took a Winifred Habimok deck that I was playing, threw this in there, and then took out all the duplicates, and I ended up at 18 cards, and so suddenly I was left like, well, I need to fill 7 cards, what am I going to play? And so you start looking at the card list and looking at cards that you may not necessarily have considered before. So while forced learning gives you 15 more cards to play around with, so you can play some of the cards that may not make the cut in a traditional 30 card deck, this sort of does the same thing by removing all the duplicates and then forcing you to look at cards that you may not have considered playing, because suddenly you now need to put in 8-9 cards that to make up for the duplicates that you may not necessarily play. So it was a very interesting experiment to look at that deck and then go through the card list, especially with somebody like Winifred, who has only access to the rogue card pool and neutral cards, and be like, well, am I going to play some of these events that I don't necessarily play, or am I going to play weapons that I was actually sort of looking at it and being like, do I play Switchblade now because I need an extra weapon? So
that's true.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. And when I did play the deck, it didn't feel that much different from playing a regular deck, with the exception that you become very well aware that when you have that one copy of Leo DeLuca in your deck, you're like, well, I cannot commit this to a skill test because it's my only copy. Or I used a Money Talks to deal with a Frozen in Fear. It's just like, well, I hope I don't draw another Frozen in Fear because I don't have Money Talks to deal with it. So you start to look at cards and value them a lot more.
I enjoy this thing, actually. The downside is definitely a downside of only being able to have one copy. But if it opens you up to try new things, you know, if the downside opens you up to try new things, whilst enjoying the upside of a bit more consistent deck. Like, it helps you find the like very specific cards that you're looking for in, say, your opening hand. Like, that's great. I love this card. One thing to note is that I think rogues have a lot of like one ofs anyway in the form of exceptionals. But not only that, but things like Lone Wolf or Well Connected, you can only run one of anyway. So Underworld support kind of rewards you for only packing one of.
And maybe this
Yeah.
opens up some new design space where they can explore more one-offs in Rogue and create cards that are tailored towards that sort of play style. Obviously, we have the exceptional cards once you upgrade, but perhaps more level zero cards that fit into this sort of archetype.
What's interesting about this card too is that in Dunwich, there's especially the return to Dunwich, there's a lot of treasury cards that deal with multiple copies of cards in your discard pile, and this just completely eliminates that, which is
Silver
hilarious.
bullet. And then there's that one treachery in Return to Forgotten Age that
Yeah.
Nate, you've had a lot of trouble with,
I hate
I
that
think.
treachery. I
It's
hate
like
it.
silver bullet.
Yeah, the treachery that makes you discard the top five cards of your deck, and if you have one in your hand, you have to discard that as well and lose an action. This just nullifies that right out of the gate, so that's
Yeah.
pretty nice.
I have actually gotten to play an Underworld support deck. It was kind of this weird variation of a deck I'd published with Force Learning Jenny, but it was Underworld Support Jenny, and it was for a standalone. And the whole thing was I'm loading up on a lot of cards you only want one of, and it specifically was Black Fan, Well Connected, and Geas. So the idea was like these are like cards that are pretty strong, but you only need one of them, and then you just kind of get them as quickly as possible, get them out on the board. And because the deck was smaller than normal, I felt like I didn't have to spend a lot of XP on supporting that combo, if that makes sense. Because I didn't, it was they were easier to find. Oh, by the way, speaking of finding things, Backpack Level 2 is very good with this card, I have to say. Because if you get a Backpack Level 2, you are searching over half your deck for the item you actually want.
And there are ways you can even make your deck size smaller with various tricks in this set. If you use the survivor version of the permanents, you can discard the top five cards of your deck. So you're actually playing with a 20-card deck, or you can play Parallel Skids, who starts with a smaller deck size anyway, and now you're down to
Like
20
20.
cards, I think. And so if you're one of those players who really likes to have small, consistent decks that are geared around doing one particular thing, this is one way
Yeah,
to achieve that.
it's almost the opposite of Force Learning in that regard. Is like if you're willing to pay a price to have like this leanest deck possible, like then this card is for you. But at the same time, as you've discovered, Man from Lang, that you actually end up being forced to do a more versatile deck in a weird way.
Yeah, that was strange because you start to look at the depth of the card pool a little more closely to
Yeah.
see, to consider, like, because I think while you are going down to singles, there are cards in your deck that are fairly important to your strategy. For example, if you're playing like a 6/2 deck, Lucky Cigarette Case is a card that you really want, but you only have one Lucky Cigarette Case, and there isn't really a card that you can replace that sort of effect with, so you could play two copies. Weapons is another story. I mean, there are enough weapons that you can say, well, I can't play 225 automatics, but I can play a 25 automatic and a Mauser and basically cover off that part. But things like Lucky Cigarette Case are a little more challenging. Allies are another area where, I mean, there's plenty of allies at this point where it's like, well, I can't play two copies of Leo, but I can play Gregory Gree if I want to get the resources and stuff like that. So how would you rate this one?
I quite like this card. It's a very interesting card to kind of tinker around with and think about how you want to go about building a deck with this card in it. For that alone, I would give it a plus one. It kind of tends to be my barrier is like, does this card interest me? And do I want to build decks with it?
I would I'll also I'll, give it a plus one as well, but I think this one deserves a bless because I've discovered you can't shove this into anything. Like you do have to work at it a bit. So I think it's a bless token under the rules of bless.
That's definitely a more appropriate Definitely more appropriate rating.
Yeah,
I think if I hadn't experimented with this card, I would have been tempted to give it a rating outside of Bless. But now that I've had a chance to actually build something with it, and the sort of decision-making that goes on once you put this into your deck, I think it's definitely a Bless token. It's not something you do lightly, and when you do add this card to your deck, you will be confronted with a lot of decision points to make, which I think is a really good thing. If you're a new player who doesn't really, or you're somebody who doesn't enjoy deck building, then I don't think this card is for you. But for those in the community who enjoy building decks and playing around with card combinations and stuff like this, it's I think this is a really nice addition. And I have had some experience playing Highlander decks where you're only playing singletons, because you can go on Arkham DB and have it build you a Chaos deck, which basically does the same thing. It just, you often end up with a bunch of singles. And when you play the deck, you're sort of forced to reevaluate the power of cards. And suddenly cards like, just using one example here, like you usually end up with a knife in those sorts of decks. And suddenly you're like, well, actually, here's a situation when knife might actually be useful. And you start to look at cards and evaluate them in a different way, and I think that's good if you enjoy card games like this with hundreds and hundreds of cards to work with. This allows some of those cards that may not be the cream of the crop to make the cut more often. That brings us to Scout Ahead. It's a one cost event with two agility skill icons, Insight and Trick trait. As a move action, you may move up to 3 times. Enemies do not engage you during this movement. The trick trait obviously synergizes with Rita Young if she is looking for an effect like this. The two agility skill icons are awfully nice on something like this. What do you guys think about this one?
They're nice, but it's a little unfortunate that when we're looking at this card in the context of the whole card pool that Nimble exists, and this kind of feels like a worse Nimble, I feel, a lot of the time.
I see what you're saying.
I mean, that being said, it's still action economy. You know, if you need to move 3 times, this card does that. Yeah. But, I mean, other than that, I find movement tends to be, like, I want to move one location at a time. I don't really want to move across a huge swath of locations when I want to move. Yeah. So that can be kind of tough, but unless you're like chasing an enemy down or something like that, then Scout Ahead can be pretty good. But yeah. I don't know. I'm not super big on this card.
I've played some 4-player games using this and having another person at the table using this. And I think in 3-4 player, it starts getting pretty good, because there are times when you want to like get a lot done in one turn, the Schizo Tool type of turn. And Scout Ahead, it's situational, but it helps you do that, because there are some times where it's like, I really need to move twice. You know, for example, to get that extra action. Like, you don't have to move 3 times with this. You can move twice. You can use it to skip over a nasty enemy. That is situational, but it can happen. I think this is a fine card. I think it's finely costed. I think its effect is fine. I think it's like a nicely designed level 0 card.
I think in, like you said, Matastrophic, this is probably better in higher player counts, where investigators tend to get spread out a little more as they explore the map. I don't really see myself needing a card like this in a solo setting where you're sort of just moving, like you said, Nate, one location at a time. I move, I investigate, I move to the next one. Unless you're in a situation, in a scenario where you need to backtrack or move around a lot more. But, you know, even the one that comes to mind is Doom of Esli, where you have to make your way back to the entrance. There you've got that card that just lets you resign, so you don't actually have to make the trip at all. So I do like the fact that this is a level 0 card, and that rogues do have adaptable. So if you do need this for a scenario, if you think, okay, I'm coming up to a scenario where movement is going to be more important, or the map is going to be large, and I'm going to have to, something like Phantom of Truth, where you're sort of running in a circle a lot, you can sub this into your deck very easily and then play that scenario and then easily pull it out for something else the next scenario. And I agree with you, Matastrophic. I think it's fine. It's not a card that I would probably put in my deck until I know that I'm going to need it for a particular scenario, but I think you'd be glad to have it when you encounter those situations. How would you rate this one?
I'd give it a 0. It's fine.
I'd also give it a 0. It is a fine card.
Yep, 0s all around, I think. It's nice. It's nice that it's got the trick trait. I think Rita is the more cars with trick traits that are released make Rita a more interesting investigator to play, which I'm always in favor of. I think the insight trait doesn't really help here because I believe Joe Diamond can't take this unless he wants to really stretch his deck out of shape to buy versatile or something like that. But it's a fine card. It doesn't let you teleport across vast distances like many of the Seeker cards. So they reined it in a little bit here. The next card is 21 or bust. It is a 2-cost event that has the Fortune and Gambit traits. It has combat and agility skill icon. Hold on to your hats, because this one has a ton of text. One at a time, reveal random tokens from the chaos bag until you choose to stop. Treat each skull, cultist, tablet, or elder thing as a 5, the autofail as a 10, and the elder sign as either a 1 or 11. If the combined value of those tokens, ignoring plus and minus values, is 18 or less, gain 4 resources. 19, gain 5 resources. 20, gain 6 resources. Or 21, gain 9 resources. I have to say, cards like this give me a massive headache. I read this card and I just don't want to play it. We've seen these. I know these cards are fun. And rogues have received many of these sort of gambling cards in the past, but more often than not, I find that the gambling cards just don't work out in your favor, especially with one like this, where depending on the campaign you're playing and the level of difficulty you're playing, the chaos bag mix, it just gives me a headache and I don't want to play it.
This is a way to slow down the game by spending 5 minutes playing effectively emergency cash.
Yeah, it is.
You know, while you guys were talking, I was like thinking about what difficulty this would be the easiest to get the most amount of resources out of. Uh-huh. Is it better to try to pull multiple tokens out of an easier bag, or is it better to try to pull 2 or 3 tokens out of a harder bag?
It changes all the time because the symbols change value all the time. So it's like... Mm-hmm.
And it changes from scenario to scenario, especially in campaigns like Carcosa, where you're constantly swapping out tokens.
Yeah. So, like, I think my biggest problem with this, and I notice Arkham, I think there's been a few even in this set, cards like this, that it seems like another one of those cards that was designed for the ideal and not for the typical. This one reminds me very much of Voice of Ra from the Jacqueline Fine starter deck, in that you do a lot of effort and a lot of work, and you end up with an emergency cash if you're lucky, and then you can also like totally blow it. That's right, because they don't actually specifically say here, but you can bust by getting over 22, you know, on your 21 or bust here. Like, so what happens is you have to get 19, 20, or 21 just to get to emergency cash or greater. Like, it seems pretty narrow. Just, and I haven't even bothered to do all the freaking mathematics because I think this is just, that's just too much thought for a card that just gives you resources. Like, just play emergency cash instead. Like,
or play Faustian Bargain.
There you go. Or any other of the gain resource cards. Now, there is one exception. I don't think this exists in Arkham yet, but if you happen to have a card that can lower the cost of events and you could play this for 0 somehow, then this would be pretty good.
Well, what if you played double-double?
Well, then you can just double-double an emergency cash.
That's true, I guess.
But it's not if you play double double with this, that's where I get up and like order some food.
I wouldn't blame you if that was the case.
Nate's gonna play Arkham Horror by himself now for 10 minutes while he slowly pulls tokens out.
You know,
of the
that's
bag.
A lot coming from somebody who plays solo most of the time.
Yeah. Now, you did mention Matastrophic. There is one of those synergy cards that could potentially talents. Lower the cost of this. Now, it is not a rogue card. The name escapes me for the moment. I'll put it up on the screen.
Right, because it's a fortune card, right? It's prophetic.
It, so prophetic, if you have access, lower the cost of this, but you need to jig your like deck Leo in Anderson. Such a way that you'd need to. Man, how would you do it?
Leo, I guess you have to be Leo Anderson, or
big versatile.
Yeah, or Wendy could do it because prophetic is guardian, mystic survivor, or Dexter could do it. Hey, kind of thematic actually if Dexter does it. Okay, but if you're already running prophetic, and you can take this, maybe consider it, because then you're lowering the cost of it, and then it starts getting pretty efficient. But if you're not able to lower the cost, don't bother.
So how do we rate this one?
I mean, I feel like I'd be the type of player to choose this card, but much to the chagrin of everyone else at the table, apparently. So guess an elder thing? It just takes too much work to get, like Matastrophic was saying, it's just emergency cash with extra steps.
Yeah, I'd give it a tentacle for that alone, because like if you blow it, you're going to feel real bad. You know, so I'd give it a tentacle. Just don't play this. Like, play emergency cash instead. Play any other, like, easy resource card instead that, like, gives you a consistent number of resources.
Yeah, I'm the type of guy in some of my past reviews where I've sat down and I've really dug into the chaos bag and the odds of triggering this thing successfully. And I looked at this card. I'm like, I'm not doing that. There's just... too many variables to calculate. The bag changes, the value of the tokens just change from scenario to scenario, and I just feel like it's just not worth the brain power. The game is already taxing enough without having to think whether I'm going to get my three resources value out of this, or whether I'm going to potentially get lucky and maybe get four. Like, even if you hit 20, you're only getting one more resource than an emergency cash. Mm-hmm. It's really at 21 when you max it out and you get the additional seven.
Worth the extra effort, yeah.
So, yeah, this one gets a tentacle from me. I'll never play this card. Somebody might play it. It might be awesome in their deck. But for me, this is just a big no.
You know who... Wait, man from Lang, you know who's going to play this card? Vase.
Yes, I was.
If you're listening, Vase, we love you, Vase, but we know that you occasionally make questionable card choices. Hashtag Father Mateo. That brings us to our next event in the box. This is Counter Espionage. It's a two-cost event that costs one experience point, two willpower skill icons. It has the favor and service traits. Fast, play when you would draw a non-weakness treachery. Cancel that card's revelation effect and draw the top card of the encounter deck. As a response, when you play counter espionage, increase its cost by two. Change the encounter deck to your deck. And as a response, when you play counter espionage, increase its cost by two. Change you to any investigator. Now, we saw a whole series of these similar service cards in past cycles. There's Intel Report, Decoy, I believe, is the agility one. Small Favor is the combat one. And now we have Counter Espionage. I'm a big fan of this card as someone who plays rogues like Winifred Habermock, who do not have very good ways to deal with treacheries like Frozen in Fear. I would gladly play this to replace, even if I didn't spend any extra resources and I just drew another encounter card. I would gladly do that for two resources.
This is your way to answer Frozen in Fear. It's huge. As somebody that literally just finished a game where Frozen in Fear ended our whole game, this would have been amazing to have in our decks.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is good. Rogues do not have a way to cancel treacheries outside of you handle this one, which doesn't really cancel a treachery. And
kicks it down the can. Kicks the can kicks it, down
yeah,
the road.
Yeah, kicks it to someone else. Or Purifying Corruption. I think that can do it, but that's about it. No, I like this. I also like I like the flavor, like how it no, not the flavor, the symmetry. I like the symmetry with the other favors. Yeah, this is kind of cool. And you do kind of overpay for it because you're really gonna pay four for this, right? But you're overpaying in order to cancel an encounter deck card from the encounter deck and draw a card. So it's like you get an extra action's worth of effort. That is pretty good. And then I really like how you can bail out a friend. That is nice. That is nice. You pay like four or six to do it, probably six, but that is nice. I like this thing.
And when you do that, that's probably gonna win you a game.
You're gonna feel great. Yeah, that's true. When you cancel someone else's treachery, that is like murderous. It's expensive, so it's like you're paying six to do it, which is a lot, but I like it. I like it. And then of course it's got two willpower icons, which is kind of a rarity in Rogue.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that is true. Yeah, I would I mean, like I said, I'd play this even if I didn't have to overpay for it. I mean, it's obviously better in investigators like Preston and Jenny, who have tons of resources and can afford to pay for the responses on this. But the Winifred deck that I've been toying around with lately has been focused heavily on trying to generate enough resources to play cards like Money Talks, and so putting something like this in there is just gravy because I'll probably have the resources. And you're only going to play this probably if you're focused on a card like Frozen in Fear. You know, maybe you'll have to play this card once, maybe twice a game at most. And so overpaying for it is, you're not going to be happy about it. But given how bad some of those willpower treacheries can be for rogues, I think you'll gladly exchange those resources.
Yeah, the momentum swing is really nice to like you avoid the Frozen Fear and you get to draw a card from your own deck for four. Like that's totally worth it.
How would we rate counter espionage?
Oh, this gets an easy Elder Sign for me. This card is probably a new rogue staple. I'm trying to think of a rogue that doesn't want to play this card, and it's pretty difficult.
I've given it a plus one because it is kind of expensive. I wish it was zero XP, but it's not. So you do have to like say, I'm spending one of my XP on this, which can feel bad, and you can hit a point where it's like, I'm gonna get my six XP. I have six XP, and I really want my six XP exceptional card. Oh, I guess I can't play counter espionage. So I'd say plus one because one XP does kind of hurt a little bit, and it can get pretty expensive. Yeah.
I'm going to give this one an Elder Sign simply because, as someone who's been playing a lot of Winifred lately, Winifred's, you know, a lot of the rogues have out of class options that they can fall back on. You know, Finn has access to things in the Survivor card pool. Preston has and Seeker. Preston has cards in Survivor that he can fall back on. Jenny can take cards from any class. So they all have options. Poor Winifred is stuck with the rogue card pool, and the level zero rogue cards are not good for dealing with willpower treacheries. Like, I have found that Money Talks can be very helpful, but it's really reliant on how many resources you happen to have at the time. And because she has one willpower, Guts isn't quite enough to push her over the top. Things like Tennessee Sour Mash, they just don't do enough on their
Expensive,
own.
yeah.
And so for somebody like Winifred to be able to take into the thick of it, get 3 XP, buy two copies of this before the campaign even starts, that is pretty
Yeah.
nice. And have 1 XP for a lockpicks, you're setting yourself up really well to start a campaign. So that's why this one gets an Elder Sign from me. I think
Nice.
that the XP cost is makes it, you know, puts it into the thick of it territory. So you can, if you really are worried about willpower treacheries, this is an easy answer, and it's accessible right away. Whereas something like, you could also, if you're playing Winifred, you could say pick up Moxie, but Moxie, the new Moxie, is 3 XP, so you'd only get one of those. So it's, Winifred probably has the draw to find it, but I'd sort of want to go this route. So that's going to do it for part one of our look at the rogue cards in the Edge of the Earth expansion. Any final thoughts?
Not bad. Except for 21 are best. Don't play that.
Yeah, rogues made out pretty well. Counter espionage is so good. I'm so glad this card exists.
Yeah, I think with the exception of 21 or Bust, there's some good stuff here. I mean, Underworld support is exciting for deck builders. Gives you a lot to chew over as you you build your rogue decks. Counter of Espionage fills a huge hole in the card pool for somebody for rogues, and especially for rogues with limited access to other classes like Winifred. The Scout Ahead, a little bit more situational, but rogues are one of the rare classes with adaptable that can use cards like that. So it's nice to see. That's going to do it for this episode. If you enjoyed what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. If you need to contact me, I can be reached at manfromlang@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at manfromlang. Until the stars are right, keep your shotgun close and your elder sign closer. Take care out there, and happy investigating.